Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats. This is a podcast for women over 40 who are looking for sane and frank advice about their health and wellness, especially through menopause. I'm Amanda Thebe, the original resilient bitch and menopause guru. In my work as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and through my own personal experience, it became obvious to me information about menopause and this curious phase of our life was so ridiculously hard to find. And that's why I started this podcast. Join me every week as I speak to health and wellness experts on hot topics that directly impact you. I've made it my mission to help you by exploding a few myths, presenting you with the facts, and hoping to inspire you to be a healthy, strong person just like me. If you like this show, please subscribe and leave a review. Then go and tell your friends, and then go and tell your husband, and then tell the neighbor, and then don't forget to visit me at fitandchips.com. And now let's get started on today's show. Hello, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host, Amanda Thebe, and not Amanda the B, like my guest today, Jane Lewis, thinks my name is pronounced. Jane, welcome to the show.
Hi, Amanda. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, Amanda Thebe, that is. Okay, so Jane Lewis is the author of a book called Me and My Menopausal Vagina. So let's just lay the lawn here. We're going to say vagina, vulva a lot. This is a show all about a menopausal vagina, and it's a super important show. I'm really excited to get stuck into this. But if this isn't for you, turn off now. We don't want you. Everybody else, stay and listen. Jane wrote this book because it was just necessary. It's like literally changing people's lives because she's starting a conversation and she's telling people like it is. I've had some issues myself and we'll touch on those a little bit, but I'd like to start by just reading a little bit out of the book that just literally had me on the floor laughing. This is what Jane says. I'd like to introduce you to someone who, despite my choice or better judgment, has become a very important part of my life. She is 52 years old. She has rather unruly hair and has a face like a smacked bottom. She never does what I tell her to and goes hot and cold on me all the time. Living with her has become something of a nightmare. In truth, she's a bit of a bitch. So, ladies and gentlemen, please be nice. Welcome to my vagina. And Jane, just like you, you're 52 too. I think it might be. Have you ever had a birthday since you wrote that?
No, I'm still 52.
Still 52. I am so glad you're on this show today. I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I have my group Menopausing So Hard, where we talk about everything. There is no such thing as too much information. And women often talk about issues that they have with their vagina through menopause. It literally took me by surprise. I had no idea this was coming because clearly the conversation's not happening.
No.
So let's just start with your story. It's really the best place to start, Jane. You know what? You talk about this incident in a cinema. Is that sort of your first, like?
So a few years ago, I was a horse rider and everything. So, and I went to the cinema and I just started to get really uncomfortable. My jeans, you know, didn't feel comfortable. I couldn't sit comfortably. And I started to burn in the vulva area. And I went and stood at the back of the cinema. I couldn't keep on sitting. And from there on, it all escalated, and from a relatively normal life to not being able to sit down, wear tight clothes, wear pants at all for almost a year. Sex was out the window, and it was really, really miserable, along with the mental health problems it brings with it as well.
Yeah, we'll touch on that later because that's a super important side of it. You were like only 45 at this stage, so I'm assuming you were going, if that was like perimenopause for you, it has to be, right?
Yeah. And I'm still in perimenopause, you know, I'm still having my own cycle. And that is a bit of a myth about vaginal atrophy. It's assumed that it's an older lady's problem, where you can actually have dryness at any age, anyway, after babies and breastfeeding and all sorts. But I was having, you know, periods regularly every 28 days. But for some ladies, and more than people realise, vaginal atrophy can come when you're still having periods and a full cycle. Because perimenopause can last, as we all know, for years.
Yeah, for years and years, right? And so what exactly was wrong with you? I know you said you were uncomfortable and you were, you know, having to like dance around and go commando. Like, do you actually, like, what was the, like, I don't even know how to like go there. Like, I want to talk about your experiences as well as like the symptomatic side and the mental health thing. But I think really more, like, when you went to the doctor, because I know you had a terrible experience there, but you went to the doctor and said, you know, what's wrong?
Yeah, well, basically, you know, I had a look, and when we're young, everything's plump and juicy and like our faces, you know, everything's looking all plump and nice. And I had a look, and literally my inner labia were like tissue paper. My clitoral hood had almost dried up and gone. Everything had basically was drying up, shriveling, and was as red as a tomato down there, raw sore. And my old episiotomy scars were starting to split open. Because the skin had become so thin due to the, you know, huge decrease in estrogen.
Yeah, and
bladder also, you know, I was getting up to the toilet 2 or 3 times a night, which is really quite common for ladies as they get older, and they accept it as that's what it is. But it is, you know, the whole area dries out, including the bladder and urethra.
I know that UTIs are a huge issue through menopause. A lot of women talk about that happening, and just the whole integrity of like our vulva and vagina. You definitely can see a difference, whether it's extreme or not. There's definitely some changes happen. It's quite clear that that's a conversation that we definitely have to have, because even if it's not to the extreme, women are noticing and we're like, why haven't we ever been told about this? It's crazy. So what happened when you went to the doctors?
Well, my first, you know, my actual GP I have now is absolutely fantastic, and she's great. But at first, because of my age, it was assumed that I was misdiagnosed originally with a condition called lichen sclerosis, which is actually also another thing that gets missed and is quite common in the menopause years. But I was misdiagnosed with that and given the wrong treatment. And then I just got on to this whole, I knew the treatment I was given was incorrect. So then I got on to very quickly Dr. Google, I'm afraid, and self-diagnosed myself, realized what was wrong, and then I got onto the local estrogens, and then I had to have HRT and laser treatment. My case is probably quite bad, but I'm equally not rare. There are a huge amount of women out there who can no longer have sex because they're in so much pain. They're not talking to their partners. They're not going to their GPs because they're too embarrassed. And it's time that we all start talking about it, because with an aging population, we're living potentially up to 30 years now, longer than we were signed up for, really. And the pelvic floor in women especially is really, really suffering. And for some ladies, it might just be, when I say the word just, I don't mean it loosely, it may be just for them, it is their bladder and their vaginal area is fine and they're still able to have sex. But it's not right to be getting up to the toilet 3 or 4 times a night. And some women just accept it as the normal.
And incontinence too.
And incontinence, these pads that people are buying, they seem to almost joke about it as if it's their rite of passage. Yes, it may be common to leak, but it's not normal. No. And there is treatment and help out there.
So you go to the doctor, you eventually sort of like go down the path and you sort of get to understand what's going on, but it doesn't end there, does it? This is a big, long process you're going through, and you're still...
I'm still on it, because I also have nerve damage, so that is a separate part as well. But my, you know, my pelvic floor, I have an excellent pelvic floor. I see a women's health physiotherapist. My pelvic floor was over tight because I was in so much pain all the time. But for me, I was never going to take HRT. I'd never taken a contraceptive pill. I was a very much an au naturel girl in everything in life. But my pelvic floor, my vagina, vulva needs local estrogen and HRT, because without it I have no life, and I need testosterone as well because the vulva also has receptors there for testosterone. And my life is managed. You cannot cure vagina, actually cannot be cured. It is managed, and it is managed, and I have every intention of staying on HRT for life, for quality of life.
Well, I mean, I think it's all still part of the conversation about clearing up the myths and misconceptions around HRT. And I know you talk about that in the book as well, because you say I love the way that you describe HRT as a fertilizer for dry plant. A dry plant. It's essentially sort of what it's doing. It brings back a bit of life to the to that area. I had something similar because I had instances of stress urinary incontinence, and I, you know, I'm a fitness professional. I have a very strong pelvic floor. It was hypertonic like yours, and that was from probably overclenching all the time. You know, we really need to see a specialist when it comes to those things. But it'd been nearly 14 years since I'd had my children with no incontinence issues at all. Then all of a sudden I start peeing myself, and they're telling me that that's sort of just one of those things, and to do more Kegels. And I'm like, it's hormonally related. I'm calling bullshit on this, because one, it's sort of cyclical. I stopped having a cycle a long time ago, but it's sort of cyclical. I can feel it's hormonal because I have days where nothing happens, and then I have days where I literally can't even get up from the chair without pissing my pants, and I'm so sick of it. And so we need to get to these experts and just find out what the hell's going on, because it's such a unique environment for every woman. But like, so for you, like, you, I'd like to talk about something that you discuss in your book, and it's this permanent genital arousal disorder, and it's something I've never heard of. This PGAD, where the hood of the clitoris, where our, like, we've got all of these nerve endings. Obviously, we use them for arousal. We're exposed, and it led you down this awful path of like towards suicidal thoughts. Can you sort of tell us what that was all about?
Yeah, so basically we have a nerve called the pudendal nerve, all of us, and it is the one that controls our bladder, bowels, orgasms, and it goes in at the lower spine, and it goes off for men as well, and it goes up to the brain. It's a functionary and sensory nerve. It's one of the most important nerves in the body, but actually the least people know about it. I mean, every health fitness person should know about it, because it's known as the cyclist syndrome. It's a certain nerve that sits there, and cyclist syndrome is people who suffer from this nerve damage. Now, because I've had 3 9-pound babies, and my episiotomy scars with age were shriveling up and tightening, my pelvic floor was tightening, and my clitoral hood was being drawn back because of lack of estrogen. And one of the places the pudendal nerve is on the clitoral hood, although it goes off around the whole vulva everywhere. And yes, it was basically, I had a feeling of on the verge of an orgasm all the time. And some, you know, people might think, oh, isn't that lovely? No, it is the most, I mean, I know people have committed suicide because of it. It drove me to a point of absolute distraction. My husband had to, I was given some pills temporarily, and my husband had to take them to work and hide them because of the fear that I would do something with them.
Really?
But ultimately, once I got on to my hormones, HRT, that problem reduced by probably a good 80%.
Wow. And you said that you know women that this has led them to suicide,
these type of feelings, because, you know, men can get it as well. Men can have a permanent, this condition as well. And there's also a symptom that we get as well. A lot of women, because when women go through menopause, it's assumed that, oh, they lose their libido. And a lot of women do. But also there's something called the sex surge. And it's the opposite way. It's where that, I suppose, a joke, the cougar word comes from, where they literally can't get enough sex the other way. But PGAD and those are two different things. The PGAD one, the nerve, I mean, literally every time I moved my left leg, I would have a mini orgasm, and that could be thousands and thousands a day. It was horrific, but it was hormone-based. It was for me hormone-based. Yeah, as soon as everything was clumped up. It's like having a tooth, I suppose. If your gums are taken right back to the root.
And they're exposed the whole way. And so it's funny because you call yourself a vagina whiz, because you literally have just... You're not a doctor, you're not an expert, but you've literally experienced this, and were like, I have to share this story. And then it sort of took you down the vaginal rabbit hole, basically, didn't it? A strange triumph, as you call it. And but you know what's so great about this is that, like, you've put your vagina on the line for everybody else, basically, because you're sort of like saying. We have to have this conversation. Stop hiding away from this. Stop being ashamed. Stop feeling like it's taboo. Like you even talk about like you being afraid to have the conversations with people. How on earth do you have a conversation about this?
I know, because it is. Everyone knows that I have this problem, this vagina problem. And the reason I got to the point where there are so many menopause books out there, and it's all sort of, and I appreciate the hot flushes and the anxiety and all those things equally, though I've never had a hot flush. I do have the anxiety and depression. But, and the vaginal dryness is very much skimped over as a bit of vaginal dryness. Yeah, I don't think people realise that on average, between 50 to 80% of women, they think it's near 80, are going to get vaginal atrophy in some form or another. I'm not saying it's bad with me, but in some form or another. Yet only roughly, this is UK based, but I think it's world based, roughly only 7 to 10% of women go to their GP for treatment.
And then they'll go to the GP and may not get the right treatment.
That's right. This one long-term, whereas all the other menopause symptoms will hopefully, not for everyone, because you can have hot flashes to a day you'll die, but hopefully for most of them, once you are in actual menopause, they will die down and become more of an equal level. The vaginal problem is the one for all of us, potentially, that will not get better on its own, and is the one that is going to very often, excuse the pun, come and bite you on the bum when you least expect it. I admin a group for this, and the amount of ladies who join my group at 60 or 65, thinking they've got to the menopause with no problem, and suddenly they have the most dreadful vaginal problems. And also this vaginal problem is what people don't realise, and so many women are suffering. Those that have had breast cancer and had all the tamoxifen and what have you, they are really suffering with vaginal problems.
Well, because it's been forced on them, right? I mean, you just literally get robbed of estrogen straight away, or estrogen. Yeah. We're bilingual on this show. So let's talk about the mental and emotional health while we're sort of like going down there with this. Like, so I have women in my group in my Menopausing So Hard group that have stopped having sex because it's so painful, and that the impact of that has on their relationships and their stress management, their emotional emotional well-being. Just the fact that those who have constant UTIs, which are agony, as we know, they're soul destroying. Any of the stress incontinences, that some are tearing, some are like you said, that they're just too sensitive down there now. Yeah. How did you even start addressing the emotional component of this? Because I know it's ruining women's lives. I know it. I hear it every day. I'm like you. I get private messages all the time. I have a group that's very active. I get way more personal emails than I do posts in the group.
Yes, because a lot of people, even the people in my women in my group, a lot of them don't actually post. They message me privately because they're still too embarrassed to talk about it in the group that is about this problem. But for me, I became so I obviously had menopause as well, so adding the anxiety and depression that come with it. But everyone can talk about their hot flushes. It's almost joked about, and it's not a joke, but you can't exactly go up to someone. You can say you've got a bad back, or you've got a bad leg, or you can even go as far as saying you have a bad coccyx. But how many of us can actually go and say, my vagina is hurting, I can't have sex? It's not exactly everyday conversation. So you are isolated straight away.
And that isolation's real, and that's sort of something I want to hone in on, because it's such a horrible feeling to feel so alone and lonely in your problem.
That's right. And I felt for a while, but then I told people I've probably lost friends through it. I'm not really worried about that. But I have three daughters and a granddaughter, and I thought this cannot carry on into the next generation, because generations before have suffered. The amount of products that are for sale in the UK in chemists and supermarkets, it tells you that this is a big problem with all these lubricants and a lot and moisturizers, and a lot of them we shouldn't be using because they're full of dreadful chemicals. And I was so mentally low and so depressed, I thought I have to do something about it, and I just somehow dug myself out of the hole. And I'm not cured mentally, because I would love to I have to really look after my vaginal area. I can't ride a horse again, which I was passionate about. I'd ridden horses for years. I can't ride a bike. I can't go in a swimming pool because my vulva is still, even with all the treatment, is just very sensitive. So I just put all my energy into raising awareness. And I was terrified about going public with this because the word vagina, so I had to get, it had to have a title that made people want to pick it up. So the word menopause and vagina are two words. So we had to put those words on the book.
Oh yeah, and isn't vagina one of the like the most hated words?
Something it is, that's... the most hated word. But it we had to get, you know, to capture it. And the lollipop has lots of meanings as well. And but I was really ill. The sort of 2 weeks before, I was getting so stressed and so panicked about the whole going public about it. But so far, I've had nothing but kindness. I've had emails from around the world saying thank you. I've had emails from GPs saying I will change the way I'm going to practice in my surgery. And I'm now strong enough that if anyone was mean to me, I would say, well, actually, have you read the book? Because if you haven't read the book, then I would be quiet. Because this could be anyone's female relative.
Yeah, I feel the same about why I wrote my men. It's almost the same thing. I mean, my symptoms were a little bit different to yours through menopause, but it was the same type of thing. I wrote a blog post. I have a website and blog post. Yeah. And I wrote this one article called "The Shite They Don't Tell You About Menopause." Because I literally had spent 2 years going to doctors and having MRI scans, CAT scans, trying to know what the hell was going on with me. Mine was more vestibular based, like migraine, and then chronic depression as well. And nobody could tell me the answers. I was like, what the fuck is going on? This is crazy. So I wrote this one article, and to this day, it's been like viewed like 45,000 times, I think. And I get emails all the time, every week, for this one article, purely because I wrote down everything that was happening. And I talk about peeing my pants running. And I talk about all of the things that are very private, but I just thought, I'm tired of this now. I'm so tired of us being scared to talk about it. And so maybe we do need to like put our vaginas on a pedestal and be like, so people can look up to them. Because I think that it just takes one person to stop holding a secret for it to be a conversation.
Well, I do know for definite that it has, from how I see Twitter and Instagram and all that, because I don't actually like social media. You know, that I've had to be dragged into the 21st century as well, that part. But I can see it has definitely got a conversation going, without a doubt. And, you know, I went to Westminster, that's its Parliament, the UK Parliament, about a month ago. I was invited, and to think that I was at a round table, I sat next to a minister and two MPs, and I was there for the vaginal part.
I know. I saw that. I was very, very happy to see that. And you were there with Diane. Yeah. I never pronounced her last name.
Dandenbrink. And Dr. Louise Newson and Dr. Yeah. Hannah Short and some other ladies. And to think that that was discussed in Parliament. And I managed to discuss the fact that the reason a lot of women are not having smear tests, there's a big campaign in the UK, smear tests at their all-time low. And one of the biggest groups not having them are menopausal women, is because it's too painful. And something as simple as having a discussion with your GP at a certain age, discussing local estrogen, and then you'll get women having pain-free smears again.
That's wonderful. All of those people are coming on my show. Louise, Hannah, and Diane. They're all coming on. Yeah, so yeah. I'm using this platform just to get education out there, stories, education, and just keep this real. Let's keep all of this real, right? So anyway, let me just get back to you because, oh my God, there's so much to talk about. So you go to the doctor, you find out what's going on, you start to regain a little bit of yourself again. You know, you struggle, but you're, you know, emotionally maybe a little bit stronger than you were before. Yeah. And then you need to start looking at treatment. I'd love you to discuss pelvic floor physiotherapy, which I am a very huge proponent of. I think that everyone, like they do in France, should get their own, especially when they've got children. What HRT and the topical estrogen together sort of did for you, and how it sort of like transformed things. And then talk about the whole like lightsaber barbecue, the barbecue action that happened. Because they're the three things I want to touch on, because the laser thing over here seems to be a big thing. There's like the intone.
It has a lot of controversy around it as well.
So if we could talk about pelvic floor, HRT and laser now, that would be so great, just to hear your perspective on that.
So women's health physiotherapy, I went there because I wasn't actually dreadfully pee in my pants, but my pelvic floor was very tight. And if you have a tight pelvic floor, you can also pee your pants with a tight one. Everyone thinks it's weak. So I went to get my pelvic floor assessed, and I still have that done. And they are amazing women. And before anyone heads to the summit, to the pads for leakage, you should go and see a women's health physiotherapist. And they work internally, and they really helped. And we discussed that local estrogen was needed. So that sort of gave me a health idea of how good my pelvic floor was working. I then went and I used local estrogen in the UK. It's Vagifem. And I used that every other night. That still wasn't enough. I then went on to HRT, which is a gel rubbed into my leg. The actual HRT made a huge difference. My inner labia swelled up again to a normal amount, and it all became a good colour again, and the splitting reduced quite a lot. But I still wasn't at a point that was good enough, because my skin quality, for whatever reason, was very, very poor from my three very big babies, my episiotomy scars. So I've known about laser treatment for about 3 years. And it's very expensive.
Do you have to pay for it in the UK? I mean, you have to pay for it here for sure.
Yeah, it's very expensive. But at the moment, it is being trialled on the NHS.
Okay.
Trial going on. So that is good. But it does have a lot of controversy around it, the laser treatment. But I had researched it. Well, I'd got to a point where I didn't have a lot of choice. So I had it done. And it has, for me personally, made a big difference. It hasn't been the cure that I went in not expecting 100% cure anyway. I went in thinking, if it's anything's better than what I've got, that's good. So internally, I had 3 sessions. Externally, I needed 5. And my episiotomy scar, so it's now 18 months since I had the very last treatment. And what it has done, it has allowed the local estrogen to work so much better. And 18 months on, my episiotomy scars and my vulva area still look in amazing condition. And as it stands at the moment, I have no need to have it again. And my women's health physiotherapist, when she examined me internally, externally, because they can feel, even if you don't know, they can tell what a menopausal vagina feels like internally. It just has a different feel. And she said, if she didn't know me and hadn't met me before and didn't see my face, she would think that I had my vagina was that of a 25-year-old internally, because it has all plumped up and it's all very healthy again, and the skin looks very healthy. But it is a last resort. So one of the specialists I've spoken to thinks it works best alongside local estrogen as well, because a lot of it, you don't need to have the local estrogen, but it has definitely allowed the local estrogen to be far more receptive and do its job properly.
How did you find with the sensitivity of it? Because that's one of the things I often hear from women, is that, you know, it's it can leave them feeling a little bit sore or sensitive.
From what I understand, in the US, when you have it done, they use a lidocaine or lisinicaine, whatever you call it. In the UK, they don't put anything on us before. We have it done, and then we leave it for 3 days. We put nothing on it at all, just leave it to air. But I was fine. You have to research who is doing this procedure, because it seems that there are too many different types of lasers out there at the moment, and it seems that anyone can do them. And I had a very qualified gynecologist do mine, who had done a lot before, but it, like all these procedures, it does not work for everybody. I know 10 in my group that have had it done for certain. 2 are worse. 2 are completely better and their pain is completely gone. And then the others are like myself, and it's been definitely worth doing and helped a lot.
Okay, so do your research, find someone you completely trust. So, okay, so things that you've done, the physio, the HRT, with topical estrogen and the laser, and you're in obviously in a much better place, right? So, what not to do. Now, you need to know before you answer the what not to do bit that, like, I'm not anti Gwyneth Paltrow, but she drives me friggin' bonkers. She's just like, she's enough to do my head in. Whenever I see her to open her mouth to talk about something as like in the qualified way that she does, I just want to slap her down, because I just feel like she does more harm than good. Now, so we talk about, one of the hashtags I always use is glitter your titties, because I feel like she just wants you to put glitter on everything. So, I'm assuming you're going to say don't put glitter on your vulva and don't stick bird eggs in them as well.
Less is more. Less is more.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me personally, I just use water. In the UK, we have, so as much as possible, the least ingredients in these products, the better. So many people are putting up goodness knows what, and things that smell like a rose garden. Our vulvas and vaginas were never designed to smell like a rose garden.
And then things like KY jelly is probably one of the worst things you can put on.
It's one of the worst things because it's so dry. It's so drying. It actually does the opposite to what people think. The best thing you can give, and it sounds like I'm really pushing everyone on local estrogen and that. I'm not, because I didn't want to do any of these things. I didn't know they existed. But ultimately, our vaginas and vulvas need estrogen.
Yeah.
Everything else is a sticking plaster. So if you can get good combination of local estrogen, and I personally like the Yes products. I don't know if you get them in the US.
Yes, I think you can. By the way, can I just clarify that a sticking plaster is known as a Band-Aid over here in the States. I once went into a chemist and asked for a box of plasters, and she just had no idea. And I had to describe what it was. And you pull the backs off and you stick them on cuts, and she just didn't know. And then she went, "Oh, a Band-Aid." And I'm like, "Yes."
We moisturize our face every day, although I don't and I should. But I just use the oil-based Yes product, or something called Olive and Bee, which I absolutely love, which is just olive oil and beeswax. And that is breathable. The more stuff you put on it that isn't pH balanced, the more you're going to unsettle the pH balance, which then causes more problems, and it becomes a vicious circle.
I'm glad you said that, because we do know that the pH level of the vagina changes with the drop in estrogen. Fact. And so the minute you start putting perfumed stuff up you, you're going to be asking for problems. And that's how UTIs happen as well, because we're not able to fight that bacteria as well. So, but that leads me sort of onto sex and vibrators. Like, you know, we're a little bit vulnerable now up there, and if we were not using any other estrogens to help us, what else can we do? Like, if sex is painful, we're going to look for some maybe water-based oil products. What's your experience with sex, Jane?
So I can now have sex again. It is very careful. I have to be very careful. But what we have to think about, whether you want sex or not, we ultimately need to be able to have smear tests and pelvic exams until we're, forever, really. So it's really important to try and keep the whole area open. So I, all throughout the whole thing, made sure I carried on using dilators just to keep the area open that I could still have a speculum use. There are then obviously, vibrators if you want to use those, because when the area becomes so sore, we also become very tense and nervous as well. So the best thing is that you go off on your own into your bedroom and you use dilators or you use vibrators. You do whatever you want. I can't personally use vibrators because I have the nerve damage as well. It would just send me over the top, as in pain-wise. But I can now use the biggest dilators in the set I have, and I can have a smear test completely pain-free now, because I had an exam the other week. So it's very important with a good quality lubricant to try and keep that area open. If you can't have sex because it really is too painful, you've got to talk to your partner, whether that is female or male, and tell them what's going on, because a lot of people just shut away and don't just tell the person why. That's when all the problems in the marriage start. I've been open with my husband from day one, and the reason the lollipop is there is because there's a bit in the book that discusses basically oral sex and what have you, and there are many ways to have sex without penetration and to be close. So you need to have that conversation with your partner, because too many marriages are literally falling apart.
And open communication is just literally key to this with your partner, with your friends, with other women, for sure. And so we are having to come towards the end of our conversation, unfortunately, because I know this is people should just read the book anyway. So we'll get to that in a second. So, I mean, can I just sort of ask now a little bit more about like your routine. So that, I think that that might be quite interesting for women to hear, like who might be struggling with this. Like, what does your day look like? Your vaginal care.
My
what
vagina, did
you call
yeah.
it? You called yeah. it a not a facial for your vagina, but a facial or something.
A facial, yeah. So basically, I make sure, for goodness sake, do not sleep with anything on the bottom half. No pajamas, no pants. You know, air is key. So before I go to bed, I just have the shower head and just wash with water, pat dry, and then I just put an oil-based, very thin, one of the oil-based, either the Yes or Olive & B, and then obviously my local Eastern. That's it. If I need to go for a pee in the night, I don't need to now, but if you're really suffering and still sore, then it's good to have a bottle of water or a jug of water next to you that you can just rinse off at the same time to get rid of that, the burning from the pee.
And then
that's night time. In the morning, I then get up again, have a shower, just water pat dry, and I add just my oil-based thing again, and in between, if I need to add oil, more oil-based lubricant during the day, I do. So what you have to remember is your vulva, your external vulva area, is drying. Although it may be warm and sweaty, the skin itself is actually still drying out, the same as your face. So you need to just look after it. But if you have a smell, for whatever reason, don't go and buy one of these, you know, smelly products. You have a smell for a reason, so you need to get checked out. Yep. But also, as we age, the smell can change.
Oh, well, I talk about that in my book as well, because I remember, like, sitting down one day in a cafe, and I thought, I smell like an old lady's vagina. I literally smell like my auntie used to, or yeah. something, you know, and it changes, for sure. It changes, but I absolutely abhor any products that are like a vaginal freshener. I just think it's just so wrong. It doesn't sit right with me. No. I think it's so you literally are on top of it though, like literally on top of it. You're like, you're keeping it clean, lubricated, and then
I'm keeping it clean, but not overly fussy. You know, I hear women, the more they clean and clean and clean, the more you clean and clean and clean, the more you're upsetting that pH balance and any natural lubrication that is left there from all the glands. So it is a case of less is more, without a doubt. And don't self-treat. Do not self-treat, because there are things like lichen sclerosis and vulva cancer and other things that do get missed.
Yeah. So go and see a professional. So how I'd like to sort of, the last thing I'd like to ask you is, right, there's women listening to this or men listening to this that have got like wives, partners, or even clients. There's a lot of coaches listen to this. What should a woman do if they're struggling with any of the things we've spoken about? What's their first point of call? And I mean, Bet, we have a lot of US people listening, but we do have primary caregivers. Would you suggest they go to their GP or their primary caregiver, or do you think they should just simply get a referral straight away to a gynecologist?
Hopefully your GP should have an idea, but a lot of GPs assume it's thrushed straight off. And to be honest with you, I don't know how it works in America, but there are even gynecologists who seem to miss the vaginal atrophy part. I just don't understand why. The rest of our bodies are aging and this bit seems forgotten. So you might have to sow the seed, could it be this? And I personally went to see a vulva dermatologist. I'm not sure that you get them in the States.
Sounds fancy.
They are dermatologists just for the vulva area.
Because
I've done so much research, I was aware of all the other conditions out there. So I wanted to make sure that that wasn't on the list, like the lichen sclerosis, etc. Go and see your GP starter. If they're giving you thrush without a definite diagnosis of thrush, then you don't have thrush. You know, don't treat for something that you don't have. The most likelihood is, once everything else has been ruled out, is you have vaginal atrophy. Mm. And get used to examining yourself regularly. Get a mirror out and just get used to that area of the body, so that you have an idea yourself if things are changing. Because with an aging body, you can, you know, things can go wrong there in the same way as everywhere else in the body.
And you know what, that's a really great lead into a part I read in your book about your husband. And I love this, right? Because I'm very, very forward when I go to the doctors. I'm not somebody who's shy to sort of like push myself forward. Unfortunately, a lot of women are, and I completely understand that. But if you're going to the doctor and everything you're saying is falling on deaf ears, and you really want to explain exactly what's happening, then let's stop being shy. Do what you did, which was get your husband to take photographs of it and actually show the doctor what's happening. Yeah. And it might feel like you're putting yourself out there, but you can't carry on. You just can't carry on.
You can't, because there is nothing worse. From the ladies who come in my group, the ones that have got through menopause and had probably 5 years of hot flushes, they think this vaginal part is the worst of all the symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah,
because of A, you can't talk to anyone, and the place it's in is the most nerve-ridden part of the body. It is just awful.
Yeah, and it's also we've just been accustomed to be not talking about it. It's a shameful thing to talk about. So I would also say, if you are going to do that and you still feel very vulnerable, take somebody you trust with you to the doctor, share your story, and then take someone with you. I think that's like the, just for that support.
I do know that people have given my books their GPs.
Exactly. And so that's another thing I was going to say. Let's talk about the book. So I actually really love the way the book is written. So Jane's very, she writes like she talks, a little bit like me. Everything you read is just what you see is what you get. And then what also the book, so it explains what she's going through, but with the meat and potatoes bits that you need to take away, with the most wonderful illustrations I've ever seen. There's a picture of Jane illustrated lying on a sofa with a bag of peas and all of these frozen things all over her vulva, and it's really perfect. Were they taken from photographs, or were they?
So what I need to make completely clear is actually my daughter wrote the book. So she's my 30-year-old daughter. This is a family affair. So I wrote it all originally, and she says, "Mum, we can't send it out like that." So she wrote it. It had to have humour in. And the artist my daughter met when she was backpacking around South America about 5 years ago, who was an artist from Norway, Holland, and they're not scared of the lady's body, are they? So she kept her number, and we just gave her snippets of each chapter, and we said, go away, we need a picture that does this, and she came back with them all.
Oh, they're fabulous. And it just makes the book and in fact, I've read the book in about 45 minutes today. It's a really, really quick read. I'm going to share all of the information on how to buy this. It's actually currently out of stock. I'm hoping by the time this airs that you'll be able to get it. Jane's book's going crazy because everybody wants to talk about their menopausal vagina, which is awesome. Jane, I would love you to share with me the name of the private group you have so that anyone listening to this can come over, because I think it's a great resource.
Yeah, so it's called Vaginal Atrophy, but I do, that's it. But I do know that some people can find it really easily and some can't. I don't know if it's to do with people's settings or it's because.
But where is it
hosted? It's on Facebook.
It's a Facebook group.
It's a closed group, but some people can find it and some can't. So I can send you a link.
Yes, and the link will be put in the description of this. So anybody listening to this, head on over. Again, it's a closed group like my own, but this is specific to this type of issue, and know that you're so not isolated. I know that there's women in my group I'm going to send over, because it's just heartbreaking. Like, this is literally ruining people's lives. And I've experienced this to a very small degree. And when it happened to me, I was utterly miserable and ashamed of myself and embarrassed and all the things we shouldn't feel. And they're pretty human to feel. But by having these conversations, you writing this book, we hopefully can sort of get to the bottom of this and start getting women the help they need.
Yeah.
So, Jane, I am very happy to have had you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you very much, Amanda, for having me.
Yep. And like I say, everyone, the link to the book will be in the description of this podcast. So get over and buy it. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on my services, head over to my website at fitandchips.com. That's like fish and chips, fitandchips.com. Or you can head over to my Fit and Chips Facebook page too. If you leave me a comment or if you contact me, I promise I'll do my best to respond to all of your questions. The views and advice expressed by myself in this show are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always go straight to your doctor. Take care. Love you. Bye.